September 14th, or September 4th.
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes. Go into communications, please.
All right, in communications, we have four travel requests for your consideration today. First is Bill Turner, John Sauter, for the Fall Director's Seminar, $350, Reynoldsburg, Ohio. Next, Judge Keith Spaeth and Gary Yates for the 22nd Annual Conference Addressing Trends, $860, Columbus, Ohio. Next is Krista Holstein, Denise Crawford, for the SAMI CCOE 2008 Conference, $1,010, Columbus, Ohio. Next, Ron Davis, Ohio Aviation Association Fall Conference, $385, Columbus, Ohio. As we move into finance, we have 11 adjustments to the budget to review. First is an increase in the general fund for $22,000 for lease of some outside office space area. Next is a transfer of $2,001.82 between accounts for website registration, visiting judge expenses, and a minor adjustment to principal and interest on a lease. The third one is in domestic relations special projects, an increase in the budget of $8,000. They've decided to consider an upgrade to their court software ProWare, and that's a reason for that increase. Next, number four, an increase in budget of a total of about $40,000, with $31,000 going to felony care contracting with the sheriff for security, and then Sojourner is now providing some home placement services for the $9,000 portion. Number five, the Dog and Kennel Fund. It's an increase of $10,000 as we adjust the budget for the forecast for the year for salaries, PRS, mental health, health insurance. Next, under Job and Family Services, this is a reduction of budget of $1 million. And then an increase in budget of $145,000, primarily due to mileage cost and an increase in contract services. Again, in Job and Family Services, this is another reduction in budget of $650,000. In Children's Services, there's a transfer between accounts of $750,000 as employee costs are reduced and reallocated to contract services. Next, under number nine, is a debt payment of $147,774 for one of the TIF funds. Number 11 is Water Capacity Fund 4110, which is a correction of and a reversal of a prior transfer. Finally, number 11, the Ohio Children's Trust Fund. This is an increase in budget of $54,000 due to continuation of their grant. We also have under finance a request to approve an increase in estimated resources for the Capital Improvement Fund for $2,500. Next, under personnel, we have 11 actions for consideration. One is for accepting the payroll of Job and Family Services. We have three promotions, two step increases, and five comp time payouts. First, you requested to accept the payroll for the period of August 16th, 2008 to August 29th, 2009. For Job and Family Services, this payroll has been reconciled rate-wise back to approvals that have previously been made by the commissioners for changes in wage rates at Job and Family Services. Next, Edna Reisner is promoted to an eligibility referral specialist 2 at a rate of $14.73 effective September 1. Next, Joyce Chestnut is promoted to the Division Director of Program Eligibility at a biweekly salary of $2,452, effective September 15th. Next, we have a step increase for collective bargaining unit member Sarah Glob as a social services worker 3 to $19.65, a 3.3% increase. Next, we have a step increase for Sarah Naga, a collective bargaining unit employee, employed as social services worker 4 to $22.42, a 3.3% increase. Next, we have a promotional pay increase for Tabitha Shanique, collective bargaining unit to the social services worker 3 at $16.83 an hour. Next, we have a request for approval of a comp time payout to Nicole Barber, collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services at $104.34. Next, we have another comp time payout approval, $96 to Paul Cook, collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services for a comp time payout of $96. Next, a comp time payout of $480 to Serena Knight, collective bargaining unit member, Children's Services. Next, we have a approval of a comp time payout, $429.90 to Christina Hayes with a, it's a 30-hour comp time payout. Next, we have another comp time payout, $190 to John Creighton, from Children's Services. Next, under Job and Family Services, we have one piece of legislation to consider, and that is to grant approval of Job and Family Services spend $900 in purchase of food and other employee recognitions awards. Now, under Environmental Services, they've submitted one resolution today, which is to release a one-year maintenance bond for public and water and sewer line extension to Hamilton Mason Road Sanitary Extension and Private Drive. The engineer has two requests for your consideration. First, to award a contract 2008-18 to Southeast Paving of various county roads. The award to Barrett Paving Materials in the amount of $2,471,785.35. The engineer also requests you to approve a special hauling permit, number 08-0901, to Chrome Deposit Corporation. Next, you're under miscellaneous. You're requested to approve an advertisement for bids to lease hangar sites within the West Terminal area of the Butler County Regional Airport. Next, you're requested to approve the advertisement for bids for the purchase of cartography and printing of the 2009 County Transportation Map under contract 2008-5M. You're also requested to advertise for bids for a fiber optic spur that connects Miami University and the Voice of America area. Next, you're requested to accept the resignation of Robert D. Summers from the Workforce One Investment Board. You're requested to appoint Charlene Mason to the Butler County Regional Transit Authority. You're requested to appoint Deborah Stanton to the Butler County Mental Health Board. You're requested to approve reimbursement to Marianne Williams, $48.75 for light breakfast for the Workforce One Development Meeting. You're also requested to grant the petition for annexation to the City of Hamilton for 7.903 acres in Hanover Township. We've received no objections to this. This is a annexation to permit the construction of a school by the Hamilton City School District. And this is a unanimous owner petition. You're also requested to adopt in a assessment for University Point for landscaping at the University of Point. This is an assessment to the property owners. Next, you're requested to grant approval for the annual aquifer preservation assessment to the tax bills, which will be benefited to property owners within Butler County. And then we have a request for, it's a correction to 9 payments, vendor payments. First is to First Communications, $139.67. Next to Petroleum Traders for $28,486.74. Next to Parachute for $985.87. Next to Kelly and Carpenter for $660.61. Next is for Industrial Sound and Communication and Sound for $575. Next is to Amoco McCain for $161. Next to Corsa, 3 payments of $3,073. The next would be $400, and the next $1,274. Next is to Forensic Mental Health Services for $450. And finally to Queen City Graphics in the amount of $4,279.31. At that point, the final two payments will need separate resolutions on, so that, you know, that is the communications as submitted for your consideration.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Now we have two requests to be considered separately. The first is a payment to Kramer and Associates for survey and preparation of easements for $1,100. And the second is to Patriot Engineering for $504.50.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon abstain. Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Meeting listed for Monday, September the 15th.
We can cancel that and go to a Thursday schedule the rest of the month.
That's what we just did.
Okay.
Mr. President, I just have a couple of comments. One on the resignation, and the other one on the appointment. Resignation of Bob Summers. I just want to say, as a member of that Workforce One representing the commission, that Bob was just an invaluable member of that board and really was instrumental in making sure that we became outcome-based to be able to determine the success of operations and quality of giving out services to employers and to citizens who were looking for jobs. Bob just did a tremendous job, and also, he was very gracious and with Butler Tech hosting a number of meetings and having our meetings there, which I'm sure will continue. But I just wanted to be on the record to say that we really appreciate Bob's work on behalf of the county and the region under Workforce One. And the other one is the appointment of Charlene Mason. I've never met Charlene Mason, but at the Children's Services ribbon cutting, Children's Hospital, I mean, yes. Her efforts were praised with a standing ovation with getting that hospital up and running, and I think she's going to be the person in charge out there. So her reputation precedes her us meeting, but I certainly welcome her to the Transit Board, especially in a time when we're having some difficulties and discussions with Hamilton County and the City of Cincinnati with regards to the Metro and our shuttle bus between downtown Cincinnati and Butler County. So I welcome her to that board.
Both of these people are extremely community-oriented, and we certainly appreciate all their effort and their talents. It's been extremely positive for the county.
Mr. President, I got one quick question for Jerome Kearns. Jerome, how are you looking on your budget for the year?
Right now, we're looking at a couple of different scenarios with moving some of the cost over.
Do you mind coming up here so we can hear? What's it look like today?
we're shifting a number of costs over, and how we generate our revenue is based on random moment hits, what our staff are doing. And in some categories, and we have silos of funding, in some categories we are exceeding our allocation, and in some we are underspending. And this is typical at this point in time in the year. I can get you an up-to-date budget. I can send it down to Tim and show you the specific numbers. Off the top of my head, I don't have those numbers. But for example, in one of the silos, TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, we are underspending in that category. For example, one of the largest programs that we administer falls under income maintenance. This is the delivery of food stamps, Medicaid, and those types of programs for the citizens of this county. We are exceeding that allocation. Giving an example, yesterday our waiting area, every seat was filled. The line wrapped around inside the office all the way out to the elevator. There are more people coming in now for our services, but there are less dollars available from the state to administer those programs. So that's one area that we are exceeding our allocation. We historically have always exceeded our adult protective services allocation. The state has not funded that program appropriately. So the snapshot right now is in some areas we're under, some areas we're over. We've lost the ability a number of years ago to transfer funds within those. They've basically come up with stovepipe or silo type funding that takes that away. Some of the resources that we have available to us to address those issues is the state has, for lack of better words, has set up a system similar to an eBay system. You can go in and you can say, we have excess TANF dollars. We're looking for some adult protective services dollars, and you can swap amongst counties to do that. Bad thing is every other county is in the same situation. Everybody's numbers are up regarding food stamps, Medicaid, so everyone is exceeding the allocation for income maintenance, while everyone has a surplus, not everyone, but most of the counties have a surplus in the TANF. And we're trying to, the other thing that we're doing that has an impact on those numbers is look at, as a merged department, what impact the merging of children's services and some of those roles and responsibilities, what impact that's going to have on our budget. So those numbers are changing. But I can forward Tim a kind of a snapshot of our budget and more specifically that will tell you X number of dollars we're exceeding or we're under in these categories, if you'd like that.
Yeah, I think it'd be good if I'd like to see a monthly update to where we are.
Okay.
And we talked about cutting some programs earlier. Are those cut, not cut, going to be cut?
We are going through the renewal. Some of them are, some of them aren't. Some of those that were proposed to not renew or to terminate were designed to help offset the cost of the early retirement incentive program that was presented. But in some of those areas, we have reduced the cost, and we can give you a snapshot of that as well.
So, your best guess is at the end of the day, we're going to be okay.
My best guess is it's going to be a challenging year. We need to have some ability to bring some of these costs in line. I mean, one of the discussions that we're having is looking at roles and responsibilities within our fiscal department and having that discussion with Children's Services. And we have to have some ability to bring those costs in line. Personnel costs make up a significant amount of our expenditures, and as well as contracts. So we need to look in all areas. But a lot of the contracts are funded by TANF dollars. And as I stated earlier, we have a surplus of TANF dollars right now. So in cutting some of those contracts, we would end up turning back more money to the state of Ohio in TANF and cut some the programs that are having an impact in our community.
Did we get cut? Did we got all of our funding for the year?
We've received our allocations, yes. Yes.
So with the funding, we didn't get cut anywhere?
And I can get you the exact figures, but some of the areas went up, some of them went down. It's the kind of the crazy funding with the stovepipes or the silos that, I can't just say across the board we went up or down. Some areas we went up and some we went down.
Okay. So you're going to give us an update and tell us where we are. And
I can do that.
And show us how we're going to get through this, right?
We can make some recommendations and proposals back to you. I mean, as I said earlier, some of these, in order for us to accomplish what we need to accomplish, we need to look at personnel costs and we need to look at contracts. But understanding those contracts that are funded by TANF dollars don't really help us, because we can't then divert those funds to other areas. We have to spend them on a TANF purpose, and there's four purposes for TANF.
But my point is that I think you're saying it's up to us, and I'm saying you have to tell us where you
are.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're working on it, is the answer, right?
Yes, it is. That's okay. Correct. We've had a number of months, we've had ongoing discussions and meetings with the different administration within Children's Services and with our agency.
And we'll have these recommendations shortly?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have just one more thing to bring up, and that has to do with the mandated sick leave ballot initiative. A couple meetings ago, I urged the governor to do everything he could to try to keep this off the ballot. I believe the governor did a fair job of getting it off the ballot, and I was very pleased to see that he's come out against it, he and the lieutenant governor. But now I'd like to call on the governor to lead the campaign to make sure that this ballot initiative does not pass, because as one of the border counties in Ohio, we stand the most to lose with economic development if this should pass, because, you know, we're just a stone's throw away from Kentucky and Indiana, and if a business is thinking about moving to Ohio, in southwest Ohio, and if this passes, that is a huge economic hit that they'll have to take, and it would be quite easy for them to move to Kentucky or Indiana, and we're going to be the ones without the jobs. And as the auditor has mentioned today, that the commercial growth in the tax, real estate taxes, has grown, which is a good thing because that means more jobs. If this passes, it's going to have an adverse effect on property taxes and then thus services that we're providing. So I'd like to call on the governor to lead the campaign to help us defeat this ballot initiative. And it's my understanding that one of the leaders of this initiative doesn't even live in Ohio, from California.
California.
This is just doesn't make sense from a standpoint of economic development, from a state that is losing jobs and losing industries. And I applaud the governor for his efforts so far, but he has to really step up to lead the fight, and be happy to join him with this fight to defeat this issue.
Well, we talked about this earlier. Commissioner Jolivet raised the same issues, same points, and they're well taken, and the governor did come out against it, and lieutenant governor, but Ohio's the fourth state, is the fourth highest state in the country with foreclosures, behind California, Florida, and I forget the other one. And Ohio can't stand to have this issue passed. It looks good on the surface, and people say, well, we get another 6 days or 7 days paid vacation. But with our proximity to Kentucky, it just absolutely makes no sense with the way we're struggling. In the long haul, it's going to be one of the most detrimental things that's impacted our economic development program in years. People really need to understand it. When you look at the whole thing, all the chambers of commerce basically have come out against it. Anything to do with business has come out against it. When our economy is struggling, especially in Ohio, it's real important that we understand there's no free lunch. And this is only, if this passes, the only way that a lot of our employers are going to have, they've got to do one of two things. They either have to raise the price on their product or they have to reduce staff. Either one has a huge impact on our economy locally and the state economy as we can try and compete. So it's very important that everybody understands the issues on this, and I concur with Commissioner Jolivet about needs to be a forceful campaign, and put my name on that list too, Greg, because this is a real important issue when it comes to the economic stability and growth of the state of Ohio and Butler County.
Do you want that in the form of a letter sent up?
That'd be great.
Yes, it'd be great.
Sam, can you?
Yes, sir.
Please.
Got Robin.
Our Butler County Prosecutor, Robin Piper. Robin, good to see you.
Good to see you.
You have something here?
I just wanted
please
to talk to you for a few minutes. To share my perspective of something, but I wanted to also tell you that I was out at the new Board of Elections building and wanted to commend you on that structure, you know, that shares the Extension Center. Just a fantastic facility that I think is going to give the Board of Elections the room they need and also give the Extension Center the room they need. I just was very impressed with the simplicity of the architecture style, but yet the fact that it has these big open windows, it's just a first-class work environment. And I just felt compelled to tell you, I thought it was an excellent job that you did in having that building.
Robin, just to dovetail on that, I think we need to also thank Tim Williams and Commissioner Dixon and Betty McGarry and the staff, because they did a great job of the transition and planning. And Tim and Bob Lowry, I think, went out every week to make sure that things were on schedule, because it was touch and go, and I know Commissioner Dixon was cracking the whip as, you know, using his expertise in building. We really appreciate Commissioner Dixon's
I hope people go out there and use that facility to vote. That's probably where I'll go vote. I hope they get to see it, because if the public sees that structure and realizes that it's simple but functional, you know, it's just a very first-rate facility. And that leads me into my next compliment. Actually, I have a older gentleman friend who happens to be in the county home. I don't know the politically correct terminology. I'm old school. We call it the county home. I don't know what the technical name is. But, man, that is a pearl out there. And I don't know who you have operating it, but every time I go in there, it is clean. The staff is extremely helpful. The people that are there, the residents, seem to be well cared for, seem to be happy. In my earlier jobs that I've had, I had a job where I had occasion to go in and out of a lot of nursing facilities, and this is just an A+. I wish the public was able to get some insight. I know it's somewhat of a small structure, but it's just first class. And so I just wanted to whoever you have running it, whatever you're doing, don't change, because that is a first-class facility out there as well. And I'm happy that my friend is able to be there, quite frankly. I'm not happy that he needs a facility. I wish he could be at home, but since he does need a facility, I'm glad that he has such a high-quality facility available to him. I wanted to share my perspective on the reformation or the discussions that are taking place in regard to reforming the way we go about providing attorney services for indigent defendants. And I sometimes watch your meetings on the camera, and I did see a Common Pleas judge a week or two ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, say, or maybe three, say that it wouldn't affect the prosecutor's office. And I wish I could concur with that, but I really don't know that that's true. I have been provided no information on what they're thinking. I've had no discussion with anyone from court services. And I have some very deep concerns about the quality of services that indigent defendants will receive if we make changes. I also have some concerns about the pressure or the effects, the rippling effects that it will have on the services that the prosecutor's office will have to provide. And I guess what I would like to urge at some point in time for consideration is possibly the formation of a blue ribbon panel to discuss what are the issues. I'm not able, because I've not been included in any dialogue and not been provided anything in writing, I don't know what the issues are. But I do know that the first step in problem solving, if there is a problem, is to define the issues. So how do we define the issues? And then after you define the issues, you try to prioritize those issues. Which are the most important, what's second important, what's third. And then you try to reach the most comprehensive solutions that satisfies all the participants involved, that hits as many of your priorities as possible. In this, in the legal system, we obviously have the prosecutor's office as being an involved party. We have the defense bar as being an involved party. And of course, we have the judges of the court system as being an involved party. And I think we also have the commissioners as an involved party, because the commissioners ultimately are responsible for funding whatever operation takes place. And if you would recall, I'm guessing maybe seven years ago, there was some talk about having court reporters assigned to every courtroom, you know, and what they did back then was formed a blue ribbon panel, and the Bar Association participated. I think someone from the prosecutor's office participated, defense attorneys participated. I think there were some judges participated. And by having all of the discussion out in public, by inviting people to the meetings, by them going out and searching out information, calling other counties, looking into it, some people started off with wanting an entirely new electronic system. Some people started off with wanting court reporters assigned in every courtroom to every judge. As a result of that blue ribbon panel, though, what we ended up with is a hybrid system. As a result of all the questions and all the answers and all the research, we came up with a system where there are court reporters in the serious felony cases that are in the courtrooms, but they kind of rotate. So it's not the Cadillac. And it's not the low end, you know, it's kind of a hybrid system. But that was a result of the process. When we needed to look at children's services not too long ago, a couple of years ago, a task force was formed where you had different professionals from different perspectives coming together and openly discussing what are the issues, what are the solutions, and they made a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners, which the board then acted upon. And so I guess what I'm attempting to urge here is I hear, and I don't even know that it's true, but I hear the judges are talking with the public defender's office. Well, the public defender's office in Columbus is going to want the Cadillac, and I would like the Cadillac. You know, I would like for indigent defendants to have the best services possible. But you know what? Everybody can't afford F. Lee Bailey. I don't think we can get F. Lee Bailey's for every indigent person. So what we have to do is come up with the most cost-efficient system that we can. But the public defender's office is going to recommend a public defender's office, because that's what they do. That's what they are. And that's the Cadillac. So what are the other options? Well, unless we have multiple people participating and asking questions and searching out the answers and have an open discussion about it, we're not really going to know how fair the dialogue was, how balanced the dialogue was, and therefore, why are we getting the recommendation we're going to get? And I think at some point in time, you're going to get a recommendation from the court, you know, and you're going to be asked to act on that. But what were the questions that were asked? What was the information? For example, has anybody called to Hamilton County to find out what their system is? You know, I have called down there. They have a hybrid system. They contract with some attorneys, and then they have some attorneys who are appointed. And they have a very small public defender's office. It's really just one person who makes these assignments. I don't know what the numbers are involved. I don't know what the volume is involved, but I know that it's a hybrid system. It's not the Cadillac, where you have a public defender's office with benefits and employees and PERS and all that, and it's not the pure court-appointed system that we have. It's something in between. But those are the kind of things I think need to be researched and analyzed and looked at for us to come up with the best solution. One of my concerns is that if you're presented with a package or a plan and you haven't participated, I haven't been able to participate, we don't know what questions have been asked, what information has been provided, I'm worried about the rippling effect it's going to have on the prosecutor's office. And some of the things that I've heard, for example, is having two attorneys in every courtroom, paying them $46,000, you know, per year to be in those courtrooms and having two attorneys. Well, when I have one assistant prosecutor in that courtroom and I have two defense attorneys part-time but on a regular basis in that courtroom, I'm worried about there being more rapid requests for discovery, more pressure on us to provide promptly discovery, to get it out quicker. It seems to me that from talking to my assistants that we anticipate we'll have more motions to suppress and more hearings, and as a result of that, we think we're likely to have more trials set. Some courtrooms will be affected more than others. There are a couple of judges that set trial dates right away. We have two judges that pretty much set trial dates right away. But the other courtrooms that we have, I think you'll see trials coming on a faster basis. So prosecutors, assistant prosecutors already have a variety of services that they provide that defense attorneys don't provide. We prepare grand jury subpoenas. We prepare witnesses for grand jury. We assistant prosecutors spend a full day, at least one day a month, if not two, in grand jury. Assistant prosecutors review the grand jury indictments. The assistant prosecutors review phone calls from 17 different law enforcement agencies to help them prepare cases. We help them prepare search warrants, review search warrants prior to any indictment. So there's a lot of things that assistant prosecutors do that defense attorneys won't do because they don't get involved until there's an indictment process. If you take the $46,000 that I've heard be thrown around, if that's a part-time person and there's two of them, it seems only comparable or fair that would mean that an assistant prosecutor would be worth $92,000. And I have some numbers here. It's nothing. But if you take the PERS benefits and you take the medical benefits, my numbers show that the prosecutor, full-time prosecutor, would be a little over $76,000. Well, I have nine assistant prosecutors that provide more services than defense attorneys. I have nine felony prosecutors who have more than 5 years prosecuting in the state of Ohio. I have nine that make less than $76,000. So see, if we're making these changes and if the judges are proposing these salaries and if it's going to change docket times and put more demand on our office, I feel at some point in time it may be incumbent upon me to say, hey, I need an increase in my budget because I need to pay my people comparable to what the defense attorneys are being paid. And again, none of this is written in stone. I'm only acting on what I'm hearing basically at the YMCA and what I'm hearing on the street. I've not been contacted by anybody. I've received nothing in writing. But these are the type of things that I'm hearing and therefore the types of concerns that I have. And, I just think that forming a blue ribbon panel comprised of judges, active, retired. I talked to Judge Crehan the other day. He said he would be willing to participate on a blue ribbon panel to help define the issues and seek comprehensive solutions for these issues. You know, involve the defense attorneys, involve the prosecutors, involve Mr. Williams or somebody from your office, you know, who's wanting to look at the numbers, you know, and see what the questions are being asked, see what the information is, and come out with a system, if in fact a system needs to be changed. I heard that there were questions about competency of defense lawyers. I think those things can be addressed without a change in the way that we currently pay the attorneys. I heard there were some questions about attorneys not being prompt in court or not responding promptly to the court. I think there are ways, if we had an open discussion about this with defense lawyers, active and retired judges, and I think there are things that we could come up with that would solve some of these issues without it meaning that we have to change any way in which we're appointing lawyers, but if it needs to be looked at, I think it needs to be looked at. I just wanted to share with you my concerns and my perspective. I wanted to urge you to consider formulating a blue ribbon panel if there are issues that need to be looked at. I think should be looked at multidisciplined, if you will, from several different perspectives, prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, active and retired. And I would just urge you to consider, as you have done in the past, to form a task force or a blue ribbon panel to air out all these ideas, to make phone calls, search out the information, and then find out what is the hybrid or the compromise. But I know that you all take very seriously the need to keep costs and expenses down. I try to keep costs and expenses down. If I was to pay those nine people comparable to how these defense attorneys are being paid, I would have to ask for about a 1% increase in my budget, which would be about $111,000. I'm not asking for that. I'm also fiscally conservative like you all are. I want to hold costs down. I want to hold prices down. But I also want you to be aware that there may be a rippling effect to some of these changes that people are promoting. So I don't want to take up a lot of your time. I just want to share my perspective. I wanted to make the suggestion of a blue ribbon panel if you think something needs to be looked at. I wanted to let you know that I'm willing to participate, and Judge Crehan also is willing to participate. And with that, I'm willing to answer any questions if you have any, but I just wanted to thank you for allowing me to come down and take up a few minutes of your time. So,
Robin, we really really appreciate you doing that, and it doesn't sound like a bad idea to me. I don't know how you could lose with having a panel like that. We've used it on many occasions, as you said. So I don't have a problem with that. I think we could check with the judges and the retired judges and the defense attorneys as well. Do you guys have any suggestions on that? Do you want to?
Well, I just know that I remember when the judges made their presentation, I think it was Commissioner Dixon that asked the judges, you know, have you contacted the prosecutor? And they said no, which was kind of, you know, I kind of was shaking my head at that, you know, you're a part of the court, you should be a part of the discussion of how it's going to affect the court more so than what the we're here to approve the budget and make sure that we're good stewards of the money and we have quality justice just like everyone else is.
Right. Well, and I appreciate that, and actually I did watch part of the meeting, and you also brought up the fact, has the prosecutor's office been consulted or informed? And and that was, I think, about 3 weeks ago, and I've still heard nothing. And I guess what kind of concerns me is, and again, I'm acting off of hearsay, which is not totally reliable, but I'm hearing the judges
are
meeting.
It's not admissible in a court.
It's not admissible in a court of law. But
I do know that much.
That's right. But I'm hearing that they're talking with defense attorneys, private defense attorneys, and I hear that they're talking with the public defender's office. It just seems that a balance to the wagon, if you will, would be to let us know. And I know that I'm probably a little bit sensitive, with all respect to the judge who indicated that the prosecutor's office would not be affected. I think one of you asked, would this affect the prosecutor's office? And there was a resounding no, it absolutely won't. But, you know, when I see the docket times change, I mean, that little change right there, that little nuance puts a whole scheduling event in my office. And I would invite any one of you up to come up and look at the board that we have where we try to keep track of who's in what courtroom at what on what particular day. I mean, you almost have to be an air traffic controller to understand who's supposed to be where on any particular morning. So so even just changing the way there's a demand on the dockets changes somewhat the way I'll be required to do business. So I wish I could feel comfortable in thinking it's not going to have any effect, but when we're in court every day, I just would like to participate in the process somewhat, or at least know that you're satisfied that, you know, it's the most cost-efficient system that we're going to get with the most, you know, the highest quality services. And it just seems like by airing this out, having a blue ribbon panel, you know, the best decisions are made after we've turned over every stone, we've asked a lot of questions, some good, some bad, we've researched all the information. Those generally are the best decision-making processes. Where the Common Pleas Court is having conversations with a select few, and we don't really know what their numbers are that they're throwing around. At that last session, there was some dialogue between the defense attorney and one of the judges that they had a disagreement on the numbers, you know. And see, I'm not included, so I don't know. For all I know, they both could be wrong. I don't really know about their numbers.
You know, the only thing I know that, you know, has come out of that first presentation is that Chris Pagan from the Defenders Commission was presenting a proposal to the judges, and I haven't heard anything back from that. I don't think anyone else has.
Well, I think Mr. Pagan is a brilliant lawyer and very creative, and he's a very good defense attorney. If I was probably one of the commissioners or Mr. Williams, and I'm trying to keep control of the numbers, I'd probably be thinking, now are the defense lawyers really going to provide more services and get paid less money? Is that a reasonable belief? Because I, knowing lawyers as I know them, that's not a reasonable belief for me. That I mean, I'm hearing this system is going to save hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that means that we're going to have lawyers providing more services, and they're willing to get paid less. If I were you all, I'd want to participate in that discussion to make sure that's accurate, quite frankly, because it kind of defies my common sense.
Well, I agree with Commissioner Furman that a blue ribbon panel seems to make sense.
And yeah. Well, you've done it before successfully, and that's actually, it was not my idea. It's just from watching you operate in the past on the decision-making that you've done in the past, quite frankly. So, But anyhow, I appreciate the opportunity to share my perspective, so thank you.
I think we'll find, Robin, that the judges are happy to go along with something like this. They would like to see some changes, and they don't know that that was the flat final answer. So I got from their discussion that they would be willing also to be involved and to try something just to make sure they got all the answers. So
I think that'd be great.
I think they'll be good to work with in that manner. So,
if I can help in any way, and Judge Crehan also said he was available, if there's anything I can do, please let me know. So
I think maybe we ought to reach a solution or a plan of action here, and I would suggest that we direct our administrator to meet with the court administrator.
Gary Yates,
yeah, and discuss these issues with him and tell him that the commission feels, what I assume here, the commission feels that the prosecutors raised some valid and important issues, and we would like to be included in it as well with our financial person to help manage these numbers. So maybe you can get back with us and Robin and tell us what the outcome is.
However I can help, just let me know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it. Commissioners, have anything else at this time?
Nothing.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.